Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, it is my privilege to welcome someone who is the disciple of Paramhansa Yogananda, who I admire greatly, Gyandev G. McCord from California. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Honored to be here.
Gyandev Ji is the director of Anand Yoga worldwide. He's a disciple of Paramhansa Yogananda. He's a Kriyacharya with the Anand Sangha. So, Gyandev Ji, tell me, what would you say are three key life stones in your life or your career?
Well, certainly the shift that happened from a professional career, a standard professional career, to moving to an ashram where I've lived for the past 36 plus years was certainly a moment of transition in the life. But it didn't happen instantly, of course. It was an evolution, as most moments tend to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Paramhansa Yogananda has left a very deep impression on many people. Can you tell me what are some of his key teachings?
Well, certainly, I think one of the reasons his autobiography has had so much impact is one of the key, his key teachings is that you can do this. Hmm. That the incredible saints that he met and the incredible saint that he was, he was constantly saying, you can do this. Mm. And I think that so many people really get that vibrationally from him, from his books, that, I think I can do this. That's what happened to me. Mm. I thought, wow, really? There are answers and I can know them? Correct. I'm in.
Correct.
So that's certainly one of them. And of course, the primary tool that he emphasized was the Kriya Yoga meditation technique. He says it's not going to happen without meditation. Mm-hmm. You have to go inside to really find out who you are. Mm-hmm. And again, he made it very, very accessible to so many people, and yet without watering it down, he just through clarity and openness of presentation that people get the sense, yes, I want to try this. Mm-hmm. So it's had a huge impact that way.
You know, it has had a massive impact. I mean, I read Autobiography of Yoga several decades ago. And as I was mentioning to you just before we started, I was listening to Autobiography of Yogi a second or third time on Audible. And as I was reaching towards the end of the book, I was suddenly introduced to you. And I said, this has to be some divine intervention that has happened. Otherwise, how can it happen so, simultaneously, if I can use the term?
It's true. Without intermediate connections, it's absolutely out of the blue.
Yeah. And, you know, when I read his book, and I've just started listening to his book on the Gita, his discourses on the Gita, I just found that he has this amazing ability to connect with people all over the world, and I maybe that's how the connection has happened to you. But carrying on with our conversation, Gyandhiji, you finished a PhD from Stanford in 1980. And then you decided to follow the path of Paramhansa Yogananda. What made you change this path?
Well, I was very fortunate that I was not interested in God at all. I checked out of that long ago. Mm-hmm. And I was very fortunate out of graduate school to be able to have everything perfect. Mm-hmm. I lived in a beautiful place. I worked in what I felt was the best company in my field. Mm-hmm. I made very good money. It was not a high-stress job. Everything was perfect. I had a 12-minute trafficless commute to work. There wasn't room for any improvement, and yet I wasn't happy. Mm. And this isn't the picture that's supposed to happen with us. We're supposed to get all of our ducks in a row, as they say, and then we'll be happy forever. And I wasn't happy, and I wasn't happy by a wide margin. I said, there must be something more. I don't know what it is, but I remember one evening, I just said, I commit the rest of my life to whatever it is. I have no idea. No idea what it's going to take, but there's nothing else worth living for. And as I did that, I started to meet people. I started to read books. It was very soon that the Autobiography of a Yogi came my way and totally blew my mind. Because as I said, I had checked out of the God scene long before, never questioning perhaps my own premise for checking out of that scene. And I just, the book melted my brain, literally, and yet gave me such a feeling of relief that there are answers. I can know them. And it's like, okay, let's go. I have to know these things. I have to experience them. And in mercifully short order, I ended up living in an ashram. And I've been here ever since.
Wow. Wow. That's an amazing journey that you're talking about. And I'm sure the last 30, 35 years must have been quite incredible. But maybe I'm going to talk about that in another episode with you. Okay. What you learned there. But, you know, Gandhiji, let's talk now about Ananda Yoga. Anand in Hindi is happiness. Right? So, for the thousands of our viewers and listeners, first, tell me, what is yoga, and then what is Ananda Yoga?
Okay. Well, first of all, so many people these days think that yoga equals yoga postures. Yeah. And that is only a very recent phenomenon due to the visibility that yoga is so much more. It's an entire science of living, of how to find the thing that we're all looking for, which is not just happiness, but lasting happiness, and not just lasting happiness, but ever new lasting happiness. And yoga is the science of finding that. It's that simple. It involves lifestyle. It involves techniques. Of course, it takes aspiration. One has to put a lot of energy, a lot of desire into it. But that's the essential science of yoga, is to know God. Nothing short of that. So when you talk about Ananda Yoga, this is a particular collection, you could say, of yoga practices, which include meditation, asana, pranayama, and put together in a way that really, really addresses the ancient concerns of yoga, which is God realization, not just an exercise regime, which it has become in so many areas. And it's good exercise, and I'm happy that so many people practice it for exercise. But I often tell my students, using Ananda Yoga to just get exercise, to just be, you know, have your health be a little bit better, is like having a Ferrari or a Maserati, and all you do is drive it to the grocery store once a week. There's so much more that is possible. Right. So Ananda Yoga is a specific set of techniques that addresses that ancient origin of yoga, and not just the more recent popularized version.
Okay. And, you know, just as another question is, what is then Kriya Yoga?
Kriya Yoga is a particular meditation technique, and there is an autobiography of a yogi, an entire chapter dedicated to it. It's given by initiation only, but it's a technique that involves working with the body's subtle energy, prana, in particular ways that help to raise consciousness, to clarify the mind, to clear karma, and to raise consciousness.
Very interesting. So, you know, as you just mentioned, that yoga is much bigger than just asanas and pranayams. Why is this not spoken about enough in the world?
we live in a very superficial era.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the people in the world are coming into a new sort of excitement about the outwardness of the world. And so they tend to focus on more outward things.
Mm-hmm.
And the most visible outward thing in the yoga world is asanas. Okay. So, fine. Mm-hmm. That's a good start.
Mm-hmm.
But as what's happening now, and I think the pandemic has really, for all its suffering and grief, I don't to discount that.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, it has awakened a lot of people who are saying, wait a minute, there has to be more than this. And we see it at Ananda Sangha, the number of people who are coming looking for something more. And these are not people who have had unsuccessful lives. These are people who have been very successful, and they say, so,
mm-hmm.
now what?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a real age of, I think, spiritual excitement, in the sense of more and more people are awakening to the possibilities for their own lives. And it's thrilling, because this world needs that to happen, as we all know.
Fascinating. So, you know, yoga really started from my country, but it is so popular all over the world. What, in your opinion, is the reason for yoga's popularity?
You know, I think what it does when practiced properly is that, forget about any teaching,
mm-hmm.
forget about anything you're supposed to believe. Through your own experience, you get a sense there is something more to me, not something more to know, but something more to experience, something more to be. And it's many people experience that in a remarkably short period of time after their first exposure to yoga practices of any kind, whether it's asana or meditation or pranayama, that they experience that, and I want that. And so it becomes more and more popular. And even if there are so many millions of people who only practice the physical part of it, they are getting marvelous benefits.
Mm-hmm.
And more of them say, okay, now what? I know there's something more going on here than physical activity. What next? And that's happening all around the world, and it's really beautiful.
So would you say that the practice of yoga is also a process of self-discovery?
It is only a process of self-discovery.
Wonderful.
Because the only thing that we can truly discover is the infinite self.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the same infinite self of everyone. It's the only thing that's available for true discovery. But it takes peeling away the layers of outwardness, of outward fixation. It takes some time, but it's happening.
Very interesting. So, you know, you spoke of meditation just now. How does meditation help us?
Well, you know, ultimately what it does is it clears the arena.
Mm.
We have so much chaos going on inside of our minds with thoughts, inside of our hearts with emotions, that we can't see who we really are. That's why, you know, in the Yoga Sutras, the Patanjali, the second Yoga Sutra, is yoga is the neutralization of the whirlpools of feeling.
Correct.
That our own deeper nature gets agitated by emotion, gets agitated by likes and dislikes. And the analogy that's often used is you have a pot of water that, if the water were perfectly still, you could see a perfect reflection of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
But that water is not perfectly still, because emotions are roiling. And meditation helps us to calm that, not so that we become apathetic,
mm-hmm.
but so that we become clear, and we begin to see as that water becomes quieter and quieter and quieter, we begin to see more of who and what we really are. Only small glimpses at first for most people, but it gradually gets bigger glimpses until it's like, I'm totally hooked, because there's nothing like this outside of me. I'm going inside. And of course, what everybody experienced then is, but you don't get away from outside. You still have responsibilities, obligations. You've got to do those in such a way that it supports the inner life also.
That's probably one of the finest descriptions I have heard of meditation. Thank you. That is amazing. So, Yadavji, let's move on. Tell me about the Nayaswami order.
Some years ago, the founder of Ananda Village is Swami Kriyananda, and he is a disciple of Paramhansa Yogananda, direct disciple. We're all disciples, but not direct now. And as he was nearing the end of his life, as you know, traditionally a Swami will initiate one or more other people into the Swami order.
Yes.
And he was contemplating that to sort of continue this lineage in a way. But then he thought, so many of the people who are affiliated with Ananda Sangha and are sort of the most, you could say, spiritually advanced are married. And what about them? And then he thought, this ideal of renunciation is not about what you don't do. It is about renouncing ego, pure and simple. And there are aids to renouncing ego, but that's the bottom line. And what he wanted to emphasize was an order that is not focusing on giving up this and giving up that, but focus on the aspiration that we all are after, is that ananda, bliss. And so he established the Nayaswami order, which has levels to it. The Nayaswamis, which always wear blue, which I'm wearing right now, signifying super consciousness. The Nayaswamis have essentially taken sannyas, final renunciation, even if they're married. And that there's no other agenda in their life other than knowing God. And as many married people will testify, marriage is an ideal place for renunciation. You get to renounce even your own opinions on a regular basis. So the Nayaswami order is, as I say, has several levels. Not everybody has taken sannyas. Some people are proceeding toward that and aren't able to take the final vow like that because perhaps they have family obligations, perhaps they have children they need to raise, or elders in their family they need to take care of. Well, there are other levels of it for them.
And the Nayaswami order is all over the world, or is it only in the U.S.? I have not heard of this.
Oh, no. It's fairly new. Because Swami Kriyananda established it only 12 years ago, it is quite new. But it is not limited to Ananda Sangha. It's not limited to yogis. There are Catholic priests. There are Buddhist priests. There are nuns who have taken the Nayaswami vows because that is the life they're living. Even though they may be in another spiritual order, that's the essence of the life they're living. So, although it is the Nayaswami order is more in clusters, you could say, associated with Ananda centers around the world, that's only because of its newness. That it's not limited to an organization. It's not it will cover the earth to the extent that people want it.
Sure. So let's move on. Got time for maybe two more questions with you. My next question, Gandhiji, is on the Expanding Light Retreat and the work being done there. Help me understand this.
Okay. As I said, I live at Ananda Village, and Ananda Village has a retreat center called the Expanding Light Retreat, a place which is closed right now because of pandemic. But as things are getting better, it will open again soon. And it's a place where people can come to just get into an extraordinarily supportive spiritual environment. Mm-hmm. Because for many, it's hard enough just to get away from home and work and family, but then they might just go to a place that is sort of neutral, that doesn't really help them, but at least is a cessation of the chaos. Mm-hmm. Expanding Light is intended to be a place that is more than neutral, that is actually has uplifting vibration. And even I, who have gotten used to it for, I've been on the staff there for the past 34 years now, mm-hmm. even I, when I walk onto the grounds, I can feel a difference. The energy is just different, and it's light, it's lifting, it's supportive, and that's the environment that we want to provide for people. So they come, and sometimes they come for classes, mm-hmm. sometimes they come just for kind of personal retreat, and we provide activities such as sadhana, meditation, asana practice, or counseling, many other activities for those who wish to be part of those, for those who wish to be just on their own, doing their own thing, that's fine too. But the meals are provided, there's nice housing for people. It's been happening for 50 years now. And it's kind of been my life, and I've been very privileged to work. You know, the nicest people in the world come to the Expanding Light Retreat. I don't have problems with people coming there. They're just wonderful souls.
Fascinating. My next question to you is that what goes into being ordained a minister?
You know, Swami Kriyananda was asked this once by someone from another religious tradition, asking, so what is your training program? What qualifies people to be an Ananda minister? Mm-hmm. Expecting that, you know, there was a big training program in this. And he gave a very interesting answer. He said that the essential criterion for an Ananda minister is when you are having a difficult time in your life, that you still think of other people's welfare first. Now, that's not an easy thing to do. And so, yes, of course, we need to know the teachings. We need to be able to convey the vibration as to the best of our ability. But again, it's a sense of not focusing on the ego, not focusing on my little self, but what can I do to serve? So the way most people become an Ananda minister is before they're ever made one, they serve. They just want to serve other people. They find joy in serving other people. They're not looking to be a minister. They're looking to act as one without necessarily any title of minister. And then naturally, they get offered the possibility of being formally a minister as well.
Interesting. And, you know, you said that there are the centers all over the world. How does one, start working in a center or just going and living there?
Well, it's the same way, really. People become connected with a center, and they, you know, take classes. They start to come to some of the functions. I would like to volunteer to help out with this or help with that. Mm-hmm. They just get drawn in more and more through their own interest, mm-hmm. and eventually, many of them, not all of them, but many people end up wanting to live in that ashram sort of setting. That's certainly what has happened in the India centers that Ananda has. That first we send over a bunch of people from America to start these centers, and many of them are still there. Mm-hmm. But the ultimate goal is that these centers will be run by Indians, mm-hmm. for Indians. And we've been doing the same thing in Italy for many years, that the Europeans have gradually taken over more and more, and the Americans have sort of been brought back to America, because the point is not to have Americans there full time, but rather to give the opportunity for the people who live in that area, be it Italy, be it India, to take on the running of the work there, and therefore receive also the blessings of doing that, of being instruments for divine light.
Fascinating. Yandirji, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure speaking to you. I have loved every word that you have spoken. I really enjoyed the way you spoke about meditation. And, you know, we always talk about giving up ego, but we are not able to, because that is almost stitched to our persona. And I'm sure, you know, if we work hard enough, we can remove our ego and hang it on the hook behind our bathroom door every day when we leave for work. Thank you so much again. I'm grateful to you for all your amazing knowledge.
It's been my pleasure, Ashutosh. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank
you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.